Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Brand My Career podcast. And today I'm lucky enough to have Jess Spendlove with me. Jess is an executive performance coach, speaker, consultant, performance dietitian, and host of the Stay at the Top podcast. So Jess, thanks so much for being on.
Thanks for having me, Alex. Excited to see where we land today with the conversation.
Yeah. So it's an impressive list of things that you do and who you are. I'm excited to jump in and chat. I'm keen to understand who maybe your favourite AFL player is that you've worked with. I did notice Errol Gordon's photo on your LinkedIn page, so that had me fangirling a bit. Though I am actually a West Coast supporter, so. but do we maybe want to start the conversation off by maybe you just sharing a bit about what you do and a bit about your career journey?
Yeah, for sure. And it's definitely evolved, and probably a good place to start is what I do now, which is really work with leaders, executives. I still work with elite athletes, so Errol was a recent client, but it's really about helping these what I call high-performing individuals, which I think some people gravitate towards that term and some people think, oh, that's not me. But a high performer for me is just someone who's motivated, driven, looking to kind of do out of the ordinary things. So I really think that speaks to a lot of people, probably most of your listeners. And the thing that I found is these very motivated and driven people can often let their career ambitions or their drive override their own individual well-being, which, hand up, that was actually my own experience. So as much as I sit here as being like a health and a performance expert, I also sit here as someone who let my motivation and ambition override my own individual well-being, and I definitely ran myself into the ground more than once. But where that all started was the world of professional sport. So I did a lot of sport growing up. I was lucky to work with really great physios and sports dietitians and exercise physiologists and all of the experts that these elite athletes have on board. And I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, but after working with a dietitian, I thought, I love food, I love people. How amazing is it that we can use this thing that we do every day, which is so tasty and delicious, to actually excel our performance in sport, work, or life? So for me, it was very narrow-minded. All I wanted to do was work with elite athletes and the best of, and I was really lucky to do that for a good 10-plus years of my career. Built a business, worked with like 7 professional sports teams, AFL, NRL, netball, basketball, rugby union. It's probably easier just to say not cricket, but every other team sport. And then also built a really good reputation where other athletes from other teams or sports would also want to work with me. So that was all really great until it wasn't, until I realized all I do is work 6 or 7 days a week. Outside of work, I don't really have a life, and I started to feel quite empty. And, you know, it was really this juxtaposition of this amazing career and everything I ever wanted, or so I thought, but it came at the cost of my own personal well-being and happiness. And I guess that evolved into this next chapter where I take a lot of what I did in sport and I start to transfer that plus other behaviors around sleep and exercise and mindset and recovery to these other high-performing individuals like the executives, the leaders. I do a little bit with the special forces. So, yeah, that's the long and the short of it.
Yeah, it sounds like a wild ride.
reflecting back on that time now, what do you think was driving that that sort of overcommitment, one for yourself, but then for professionals in general that have that motivation and drive that then often ends up leading to burnout? Like, what do you see as was driving that?
A few things. One, just the joy that it brought me. Like, I loved what I did, and I was like, how amazing is it to be afforded these opportunities, which I worked really hard to create. But then, like anything, as you start to build a reputation, more opportunities come to you. And it was nearly sitting there going, how do you say no to something so many people would want? And, you know, little 15-year-old Jess, that this was her goal, how incredible that this is happening. So there was that side of things. There was also, I think there's different types of people, and I thrive in environments that are high pressure and high stakes. And I thrived in that for a long period of time. But, you know, working with a couple of teams as opposed to working with seven, even just learning the names of all the people that sit across all of those teams and sports, like, I just took it too far because I wasn't able to acknowledge what I needed. And look, there was probably a little bit of ego in it as well. Like, I'm sure my ego was thriving. It was like, oh, there's another team and another logo and how great for my business. And also, you know, this was when I was in my late 20s, early 30s. And I just thought, to be honest, I was invincible. Like, I thought, I have a higher tolerance. I can outwork anyone. You know, I've always done more. Like, I swam before school, after school. Like, there was just this narrative that I told myself. And it didn't all come crashing down, but it was pretty close to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, was there a particular moment where it sort of all came to a head, or was it more you just sort of gradually started unraveling the fact that, oh, maybe I'm not in the right place?
Every year looking back, not every year in professional sport, but say there was 10 years that I kind of, like, I was with the Giants for 8 years. I was with the Cronulla Sharks for 8 years. I was with the Sydney Kings for 5. So I was with these teams for a really long period of time. And it wasn't necessarily at the start, but for at least a good 5 years, which is a good chunk of that, every year I would run myself into the ground to an extent. Like, I would get sick, and your immunity is a really big indicator of your overall well-being. So if you're constantly getting run down or sick, it's a pretty good indicator that you're pushing things a little bit too far. Same as an athlete, whether they get sick or injured regularly. Like, I mean, there's some injuries, contact sport, obviously not that, but niggles and little breakdowns. So there was definitely warning signs for a period of time. But as that went on every year, the off season, which would be October, I would spend a few weeks just absolutely exhausted. Looking back, that was definitely burnout. And it was just this kind of, again, the narrative in my head was like, this is the price you pay for the opportunities that you're afforded. But when it all really came to a head was COVID. I got really sick. So obviously everyone had different experiences. I got really sick, not necessarily in COVID. I did have some pretty bad symptoms, but it was more off the back of that. So looking back, it was multiple years of absolutely running on empty, and then getting COVID. And then it was 12 to 18 months off the back of that, of just illness. And I knew I wasn't well. I knew something was wrong, and I was, again, fortunate that I listened to my intuition and I didn't just accept the preliminary tests that were done. And everyone was like, you're fine, your bloods are fine, your chest x-ray is fine. And I was like, I'm telling you, I'm not fine. Like, you know, I couldn't leave the house without wearing 5 layers of clothes, and I was just, I just was not okay. And anyway, I pushed for some answers, and looking back now, it honestly took 18 months to get a diagnosis. I actually ended up having to have surgery. I developed a type of asthma, which I'd never had respiratory issues, which stirred up all this sinusitis. Anyway, like, the long and the short of it is I'm convinced, and there's no way of ever kind of 100% knowing this, but it was a combination of COVID triggering, or COVID in combination with burnout, and it just led to that. So I did have a a bit of, I guess, a come to Jesus moment. It was a revelation. It was really like, if you don't stop now, like you're in your mid 30s, this you're going to really pay the price in some other way, shape or form. So I did actually have a pretty pretty not ideal experience, which really then was the catalyst and the memo, which, to be honest, I ignored for a really long period of time.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? So often the helper neglects their own help, right? Like you're there supporting all these people with their nutrition and their health and getting them operating at their best, and it's coming at the detriment at your very own.
And I think a part of that was like, it's not like I was an unhealthy person. I was eating well, I was exercising, I was doing all the surface level things. But the one piece which I talk a lot about now is proactive recovery, and that was non-existent. So for me, you know, working in professional sport, it sounds amazing, but as you would know, it's games on the weekend, and I traveled with the Giants for 6 years. So, and they're the most traveled team in the competition. So that was a good 18, 20 weeks of the year I was away. And then the day off I might have, which would be a weekday, I would spend working on my business. So there was either some sort of physical or cognitive load. There was really no switch off. I made myself available to all of the different teams because I thought that's what I needed to do and I wanted to do to be the best at my job. And that's why, you know, I was getting the opportunities. But when you don't rest, when you don't restore, when you don't have proactive strategies, that over time unravels you. So that was the piece that I was definitely missing.
Mm. You talked about how you started to build the reputation within the industry, and that obviously then generated more opportunities. What do you think are the things that you did that helped you build a reputation in your industry as a go-to expert in this space, and that created those opportunities?
Yeah, good question. I think a few things. I mean, at the time, I didn't think I was doing anything out of the ordinary, but I must have been to kind of get those opportunities. So sport is brutal. If you don't perform, you're out. And so the fact that a lot of teams, you know, if they're not performing, the staff get cleared out. So the fact that I was not only even able to work with so many teams, but stay at a lot of them for so long, I think one, it was the consistency and what I delivered. But for me, I've never been someone to just go with the flow. As in, if I could see something that could be done better, I would want to advocate for that. So I guess there was this standard that I brought and this consistency that I delivered. And I was able to build really great relationships. I mean, I think that was absolutely key with all of the decision makers. And to be honest, I wasn't there at the time going, oh, I need to strategically build relationships with key people. I was just being myself, which is a really, you know, even like us, we connected online and I reached out, and I love to connect with people, and, you know, I take each person as they are. I never just, you know, treat everyone the same. So I think that person-centered approach, the desire to have really high standards, the desire to push excellence, I think they were two or three of the main things that were probably the differentiator.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's really good. So I'm keen to dive into each of those areas that you focus on around nutrition, sleep, movement, mindset and recovery. And you touched on it before, like the thing that I was reflecting on when I was thinking about those was, it always feels like the sort of thing that when you get yourself operating in well in one of them, it pushes something else off. Recovery, I feel, is like the sort of unsexy one of the group that sort of people will probably steer away from or not give as equal importance. But so I'm keen to get to that one as well. But thinking about nutrition, so what's important about good nutrition?
I think the thing with nutrition and also sleep is that these are behaviors that every single one of us are doing every single day. So the reason why these are so powerful are because it's not necessarily about adding anything extra. It's just about maybe adjusting or tweaking to get a better output. So that's why they're my kind of two core ones that I really focus on from the start. I mean, nutrition 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day, this is something that we consume. And if people just understood how much that can drive our energy, our focus, our recovery, you know, our nutrition and our sleep have this bi-directional relationship. So much about what we eat in the day or don't eat impacts how well we sleep. So it really is just this kind of catalyst for what I think is the most important metric that everybody wants more of, which is energy. What we eat can either give us energy or it can either drain us of energy. And that really works, I guess, we're getting too technical, but I guess at a physiological level, like what we want to do is train our body and our brain to know what it's getting and when. And this isn't about being a robot, but it's just about giving yourself nutrients and meals that are going to boost your energy, stabilize your blood sugar levels and sustain you. Because what I see a lot of people doing is being very reactive. They don't eat until they get hungry, or they let their day run them and they eat when they've got time. Whereas even just a little shift of springboarding or starting your day from the same place with, it doesn't have to be the exact same meal, but the same composition, and then having your personal KPIs and your personal meetings, like when you eat in your diary, and prioritizing that can really be one, a circuit breaker for the what's happening in the day. But two, it's like a little pit stop, you know, it's a pit stop to refuel, to give yourself nourishment, to sustain what you're doing. Because what a lot of people do is they wait till they're tired, they wait till they're craving, they wait till they've got time in the day, and it's just very sporadic. And so if you want more stable energy, if you can just set a little bit of a rhythm and a routine with what you eat and when, that will drive that so much more.
Yeah, absolutely. My question that is, what are some techniques that you can do to help you plan for that when you work a schedule that can be quite sporadic? So like for me, I'm often mixing my time between working from home, working from the office, out on the road, and it can sort of switch and change. It sort of might be a bunch of little trips here and there throughout the day. And I have found, or it might be, you know, driving a couple of hours out to a more regional area of the Hunter where I'm based. And I find that sort of trips me up often in terms of like getting a good schedule and routine for my eating habits. And then you end up grabbing something on the road and it's, you're never going to get a healthy option on the road, right? Or at least that's what I tell myself. And then to justify getting Macca's or KFC. So what would your advice be in that scenario?
One of the main things is just a little bit of visibility. So it doesn't have to be like in the kitchen on a Sunday doing meal prep for the entire week, but even just spending a little bit of time the day before thinking, what am I doing? Where am I going? What have I got with me? And while I talk about consistency and a rhythm, one really important piece to emphasize here is that is not the same meal and the same snack at the same time every single day. One kind of concept I really like is something I call consistency in the inconsistency. So I think the first thing is understanding what good feels like for you. And everyone's a little bit different depending on your age, how active you are. Like there's a lot of factors. But let's just say for the sake of this conversation, I find most people would benefit from 3 meals and 1 snack. Some people 3 meals and 2 snacks. How that looks in your day can change. So it's kind of, I guess, like you said, depending on the day, there might be a little bit of Tetris. But if you've got this consistent rhythm, it's nearly about playing Tetris with your day and thinking what is going to sit where. And so while a day in the office or at home might look like breakfast, lunch, snack, dinner, maybe when you're on the road, it's breakfast at home. Maybe lunch needs to get pushed back, but let's bring that snack forward. So that kind of standard 3 to 4 hour gap, which probably happens across the day, is still retained. Because what a lot of people do is they'll retain that rhythm, breakfast, lunch, snack, dinner. But if lunch is normally at 12 or 1 and you're caught out and now it's 2 or 3, that's a really big shift. So even just switch what you're doing, or if you're on the road and you haven't been able to prep, take a couple of extra big snacks. And that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions is people think a snack is like a muesli bar or some popcorn or a piece of fruit. And in my world, a snack is actually like a mini meal. It should still really have all of those same elements, in particular some protein. Now, protein is really this key nutrient for stabilizing appetite, stabilizing our energy, managing our cravings. So some tuna or some, if you've got a little esky, taking some yogurt or, maybe it's like a mini meal or some sort of like rice and bean mix. So it's just about kind of thinking ahead a little bit and doing a little bit of planning, because you're exactly right. If we're just relying on what's on the road, which again, from time to time is totally fine, but what I'm kind of recommending people focus on more protein and more fiber, and that's just not generally what's available when we're out and about. So there needs to be a little bit of preparation, but that's probably my biggest tip. Move your meals and snacks around to retain that rhythm, but fit with where you are and what you're doing.
Yeah, no, that's really good advice. So sleep. So why is sleep important?
Sleep is the bedrock for well-being and performance. And we all know, like, you have a good sleep and the day's manageable, and you have a pretty crappy sleep and you've maybe got a bit of road rage on the way to work, and your emotional agility for handling stress in the office is compromised. So sleep, if obviously my background is a dietitian, so the level of like nutrition playing a role in you being your healthiest, highest performing self is unquestionable. But honestly, if someone said to me, if I could only choose one, where should I start? And I would say sleep. Because when you get that right or better, everything else gets easier. You know, from a decision-making, from a food point of view, if we're getting less than 6 hours or our quality of our sleep is really compromised, we're tired, so we're seeking caffeine and sugar. From a hormone perspective, we produce more of the appetite hormone, so we're actually hungrier, so we want to eat more. And then on top of that, like I said, our ability to just creatively think or problem solve or handle the stress of the day is significantly reduced. So probably the biggest thing I want to say with sleep is just create a wind down routine, similar to a plane that lands. You know, every single time you get on a plane, there is a standardized protocol for the plane to land. You get the notification, get your seatbelts on, put your phones away, put your laptops away. Every single time it's the same. What you want to do is create your own landing protocol for the night. This whole watching TV or being on your phones and being probably quite tired, but then thinking you can just jump into bed and everything's going to switch off, does not work. We need to wind down our brain. We need to create a sleep sanctuary, and we need to train ourselves to get ready to sleep. Not only is that going to enhance the quantity, it will enhance the quality, the depth of our sleep. So our deep and our REM sleep, which are our two most restorative phases. And that within itself will elevate the quality and the quantity of your sleep. So even if you just start by putting a little mini wind down ritual. And to be honest, mine's quite simplified at the moment. It really is just dimming the lights, turning the TV off at least, 45 minutes before I go to bed, having a hot shower, maybe journaling or reading a book. But I don't do both. I'll generally do one or the other. And then that's it. It's really not complicated. Mm-hmm. The other thing you can do is at times when you're a little bit more stressed and you might need a few extra things, have a couple of extra strategies. So you might need to prolong that, but just start there. And then probably the second point is the consistency piece. So there's some really great research coming out showing that the quantity, which I think can be really jarring for some people who just might have full days, might have children, just might not be able to get the desired kind of 7 or 8 hours. Even if you can start to standardize the time you go to bed and wake up, and ideally within about a 30-minute window, that within itself drives so much more from a restoration point of view. So they're probably my two big tips there.
Yeah. Do you think ways of working, particularly in Western culture, are conducive with good sleep hygiene?
I think it requires a lot of boundaries and a lot of awareness. You know, the being on screens, interfered, just that wired feeling, that draining feeling. Plus also if you're working in different time zones or working at home, like that was probably one thing which a lot of people found really challenging, just that lack of separation. So I think if you are someone that works from home, which we both do on certain days, it really requires you to have good rituals and boundaries around what you do and when, because when the office is in the living room or in the room next door, it is a lot harder to switch from work mode to relaxation mode. So you really need to create a boundary and a ritual to have that separation. So I really think there's probably two parts to that wind down. There's the end of the day where you want to close the laptop, switch off, disconnect. And if you can create some sort of separation wind down routine there, maybe it's you get changed or you go for a walk to decompress or you do a meditation, or it can be whatever's going to work for you, but have some sort of end of day signal to the brain. So that's the first thing. Mm. And then the second part of that is that landing protocol for yourself at night.
Mm. I'm pretty lucky in that even though my work changes up, my wife's is very structured. She goes to the office every day. And so I'll typically either drop her off at the ferry in the morning and then in the afternoon drive down to get her, or I might drive into the city or go to the gym or for a walk or something. So I'm probably lucky in that I have that routine there that allows me to not just to keep pushing on or getting too absorbed in your day and the work that you're doing. Movement. What's so important about movement?
Movement is a high performance behavior. And similarly to nutrition and how much that can drive energy, exercise gives you energy. And I find this is probably the biggest missing piece for a lot of people. I find there's a lot of, I'm too tired to exercise. And it's actually like, well, one of the main reasons you're tired is because you're not exercising. And I know you've had some really great people on the show talking about movement snacks and 2-minute workouts and all of that. But what we need to understand is that exercise in any way, shape or form is going to give you energy. It's going to boost your mood. It's going to boost your concentration. In the short term, it will really increase that productivity and focus. And that can be in any way, shape or form. That can be a quick walk. That can be a couple of squats or star jumps. That could be a class before work. It really can be in any way, shape or form. So I think the message is we just all need to move more. And then I think the next thing to that is this conversation around longevity and health span and quality of life and this longer term conversation. And the reality is that the biggest indicator of our health span and our longevity are our muscle mass and our cardiovascular fitness. So once we've just mastered the move more message, and in the recovery piece, I'll talk a little bit about brain breaks, which are my favorite daily form of recovery, and movement and getting outside is one of them. But once you've mastered that, if you can get a little bit more strategic in doing some resistance training, pushing your body, doing different types of cardio, that is really not only going to serve how good you feel now, how energized you feel, how focused, how productive, that also builds your stress tolerance. So it's forms of good stress, which then enable us to handle stresses of the day and life better. But it also serves our cardiovascular fitness, and it also helps us retain our muscle mass as we age. And, you know, unfortunately, once we kind of tip even into our 30s, we decline in muscle mass. So we really need to be looking at how do we retain that? What are the strategies? And the two big pieces to that puzzle are what we eat, in particular protein, which I briefly mentioned before. But the other piece to that is particularly resistance training, which, you know, luckily is starting to have a bigger conversation, and particularly in women, and particularly in women who are in that kind of 40 to 50s perimenopause, menopause phase, because the decline in muscle mass on average is about 3% a decade. But for women in that phase of their life, it's more around 8 to 10%. So because of these hormonal changes that are happening, estrogen, which is very protective of muscle mass, anyway, all the physiology shifts, but that really does drive a rapid decline in muscle and bone in that period. So if we can have these conversations, not only about moving more, but adding in resistance training for men and women to mitigate that decline in muscle mass, which happens as we age, but particularly in that really key phase for women, I think it's just a really important conversation. So it makes you feel better. It makes you look better. And it helps you live longer and healthier.
Yeah. I've definitely, and yeah. So we had Lizzie on and talked all about movement, and I talked with her about all of my aches and pains that are getting in the way of me moving consistently, and particularly how some sort of consistent injuries, knee injuries and stuff over the last few years have definitely got into my head around that. And that sort of leads us into the next one around mindset and how important mindset is in this whole conversation.
And I'd love to just even say, like, my own experience is I have a lot of chronic injuries as well. I have a scoliosis. I did a lot of sport. I was a swimmer growing up. Butterfly was my sport. I didn't choose it. It chose me. So like a scoliosis plus doing like 200 meter butterfly at like 11 or 12 years of age, like it's probably going to come with some complications later in life. And I actually really backed off a lot of my strength training over the last 5 years because of the injuries. But what happens if we don't use it, you know, we lose it and we actually get less effective. So what I've started to do, and it's a big investment, like I, you know, see a physio every few weeks and get a massage and Pilates, and I now go and do strength training. But even just having these conversations, the awareness for me was like, I need to find a way to move around this. But you're exactly right. Chronic injuries and pain are a number one driver for people, you know, just to limit or avoid that. So what I would encourage is, you know, seek out that support, get a program, get exercises that are going to work. And to the mindset piece, the biggest thing I see is that all or nothing mindset. And I see it a lot with exercise. I don't exercise and now I'm doing an 8-week challenge and I'm going to the gym 5 days a week. And it's that real boom to bust. And of course, that is going to flare up potentially whatever underlying issues or injuries you've got, plus some others. So it's really about this, you know, my whole philosophy is sustainable high performance. And if we think specifically, I guess, about this example of the exercise and the mindset piece, we need to walk before we run and we need to integrate consistent load management. I have this conversation with my partner all the time. He does not manage his load and then he'll get these injuries. And I'm like, we've had this conversation. We're just, you know, let's not go to Barry's boot camp 3 days in a row and then miss a week. Let's go every 2 to 3 days. We need to have the recovery. I've just thrown him under the bus there a little bit, but it's, you know, right.
You've
really
pretty much described what my wife is consistently saying to me.
and again, you know, as a high performing person, you're motivated, you're driven. All of this is coming from a good place. And I think that's the thing people need to understand. It's coming from a good place, but whether we're talking exercise, whether we're talking workload, whether we're talking how we approach our nutrition, you know, Uber Eats 5 nights a week, and then I'm going on an 8-week challenge where I'm eating 1,500 calories. Like all of these extremes do not deliver consistency, do not deliver momentum. And while in our career, there's an ability to focus, get in, get things done, you're probably going to get rewarded for them, which is what happened to me. When it comes to something which is a 24/7 job, which is your health, which is your well-being, and which is your performance, having extremes and being always on, or having a strategy which is only ever 100% or nothing, is not working. It's not sustainable, and it doesn't need to be to that level. Often it's, we need to, like I said, walk before we run. Metaphorically and, you know, actually as well.
Yeah. I'm mainly just going for walks at the moment, and definitely, like, I have a gym membership, but I hardly go. I think I'm too traumatized, but I went back to the gym, was running, and I tore my meniscus on the treadmill. Yeah, so I'm just sort of consistently walking, and even that's enough to sort of flare me up and sort of probably at my limit. So it's, I'm enjoying it. And we've got nice, beautiful beaches in Newcastle, so why wouldn't you go for a nice walk?
And movement, as Lizzie would have said, any movement is great, and it delivers benefits. It delivers physical, physiological, psychological, and even just building that rep or that muscle of going for movement, getting those endorphins, getting that benefit over time, you know, whatever the next thing for you is, that will come. But I just, the 8-week mindset challenge has really done, I think, a lot of damage to a lot of people. This ability to just, oh, we'll just switch on and switch into gear and turn it up and do all the things. And look, maybe in your early 20s, you can handle that. I'm now in my late 30s and I definitely, definitely can't do that. And I think a lot of people experience it and it turns them off. So whatever you enjoy, whatever you've got access to is good. And then some of this stuff I spoke about, which might seem out of reach, like doesn't have to be a next week or a next month or even a next year thing. It might be something you build to over time.
Yeah, awesome. And so, like I mentioned, the long lost cousin in all of this that everyone's forgotten about or doesn't care about is recovery. So why is recovery so important and what does it do for us?
Recovery is, I guess, what we need to know. It's not a luxury, it's a necessity. And when we think about athletes, when we talk about recovery, that's actually where the adaptation happens. So if we think in the context of what they do, pushing their bodies to the extreme, you know, if AFL, which poor West Coast, they haven't had a few great years. But, you know, pre-season is where they do the work. And you know, I've been lucky to see behind the Giants, and I've obviously had a few clients that have been Swans players more recently. That is 12 weeks of, like, it is a lot. They're doing a lot of conditioning. They're doing a lot of strength sessions. Any team sport, you know, that's where the work is done to get fitter, faster, stronger, to develop the team skills, put the game plan into play. That's where that all happens. But where they actually get fitter, faster, and stronger is in the recovery phase. So if we think about us, and you know, whilst we're not elite athletes, we're corporate athletes and we have demands of our job, for us to recover and replenish from the day, we need to be intentional about what we do. And that comes in the form of physical stress, psychological stress. What are we doing cognitively and physically to restore? And you know, ice baths and saunas are having their heyday right now, which I'm, you know, I'm a big fan of both. Maybe not an ice bath, a cold shower for me, but that's quite a deliberate, maybe unattainable form of recovery for a lot of people. What actually moves the needle, what actually helps you restore, what actually helps you recover are the little micro breaks that you have each day. And this is where I talk about brain breaks. So they're really, they're based on working with an internal cycle called our ultradian rhythm, which is a microcycle. We all have, people have probably heard of circadian rhythm, which is our kind of 24-hour clock when we wake, when we sleep. Ultradian rhythm are these microcycles of about 90 to 120 minutes, which internally are within us. And so what we know, there's about this 90-minute period of kind of peak performance, so peak output, peak focus, and then there's around a 20-minute kind of restoration phase. And so what I like to suggest to people is think about in your day how you can maybe start to leverage that cycle to get more out of your on mode, but then strategically, doesn't have to be 20 minutes because people might be listening going, this is just not practical for me, but it can even be 2 to 5 minutes. And what I see a lot of people doing, myself included, so, you know, guilty as charged, is I'll work hard and then in my rest I'll get out the social media or I'll go and get a coffee. So the real caveat to that is the rest, we want to try and have that stimulant free. So sugar, caffeine, screens, and we want to have some sort of restoration practice. So whether that's a lap around the block, whether that's you can go out on your balcony and look into the distance and, you know, get some reprieve from your screens, whether you do some breath work, whether you hydrate and do a couple of deep breath cycles, you might listen to a meditation. Like, there's so many ways you can have a brain break. But I guess I just want you to think, is this stimulation free? And am I being intentional with it? And, you know, if you can do that one, two, or even three times a day, so a short mid-morning break, lunch break, which is away from your desk, you know, being present with your meal or even your friends if in the office or however that might be, and one in the afternoon, that will significantly boost how you finish your day. You know, finishing your day and feeling so cooked and fatigued and mentally exhausted is not how we should feel. And if we take those opportunities to cognitively restore and have a little bit of a break, and if we can get in nature or do something very restorative and activate that parasympathetic nervous system, that really like rest and digest phase, that really supports our daily recovery. And it's kind of one of those things, you don't know how good you can feel until you start to do it. And I guess a lot of people are just operating in the zone that they know. But a lot of what I'm talking about here is operating in a way that they can feel elevated or enhanced or just less fatigued and less exhausted.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Because I find for me, particularly on the days I'm working from home, like a little walk around the block, I've got a park across the road sort of thing, I'll just, you know, walk across and do a couple of laps. And that just helps you sort of this, yeah, get out of the house and sort of this sort of refocus. You've been staring at a screen in a small room, mold issues in the house, which is another story. But often that's where I then get a sort of creative idea or something unlocks work-wise, that then you come back in and you sort of, you've got that moment of inspiration just by getting away and switching off.
100%. I mean, how often do you have your best ideas, or when you're really trying to solve a problem and you're just sitting at a screen with probably all your tabs open and your inbox there and all the other things? Rarely is that where we have our best ideas. Where we have our best ideas is in nature, where we're walking, where we're looking into some blue space or some green space. We're giving ourselves that opportunity to step away. And you're exactly right. That's where the good ideas or the problem we're trying to solve is solved, and then we can come back and execute it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Jess, this has been a really great chat. How can people find you and follow along with what you're doing?
Few places, very active on LinkedIn these days, which is how we connected. My website, jessicaspenlove.com, or all of this that we've spoken about today, I dive deeper in my podcast, Stay at the Top. So if you've liked any or all of that, that's a really great place to tune in and dive deeper on some of these topics with me.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for being on.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.